Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm pretty confident in my memory here. Sometimes my memories get all jumbled up, but I'm pretty confident that when I said that on the air, which was then turned into our production to start the hour, pretty confident I was talking about Deflategate. I don't enjoy this story any more than you do. That was the worst. Why doesn't anyone ask me that question on our hump show? Ask Amy Anything. What's the worst story you've ever covered in your talk show career? Now, I mean, there are some other ones that were painful for me to talk about, but having to talk about friggin' Deflategate for a year and a half was the biggest waste of time. It totally stunk. Now, I will say it was great for talk radio, though, because you guys were all in. And by you, I mean sports listeners across the United States of America. Holy cow.
Wrong, I know.
Yeah, right. We couldn't get away from that story ever, ever. Oh my gosh. Maybe Tom Brady will reach out to Joe Kelly and offer some type of, advice about this 8-game suspension that he's facing.
I don't have an explanation for what happened.
You lie. So Joe Kelly is appealing his 8-game suspension for throwing behind Alex Bregman near his head, and then for throwing behind Carlos Correa. Jim Rome had Dave Roberts on his show on Wednesday. Now, Dave Roberts also received a 1-game suspension, and Jim flat out asked him, was Joe Kelly throwing at the Astros on purpose?
I'm going to say no. And I think that Joe echoed that sentiment last night in his post game. So, we've all seen the video of him warming up and breaking his own window in his house. So, I don't know. I'm going to stick to my story.
And on that note, that's right. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Good morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. A little more with Dave Roberts coming up. Again, he was a guest with Jim Rome, and he and Jim are buddies, and so I'm not surprised that he appeared on Jim's show when he was serving his 1-game suspension, courtesy of Major League Baseball. Joe Kelly was with the Dodgers last night. He did not get into the game. They used every other pitcher they had into the 13th inning, and there's that new funky rule. In extra innings, a runner is automatically on second base. It's very little league of Major League Baseball, but they're trying to speed things up. They automatically put a runner on second base in extra innings so that each team has a chance to score. And in the case of the Dodgers and the Astros, they did, in fact, score in the 11th, and they were still playing into the 13th.
Tied at 2, beginning the 13th. And the pitch. Fly ball to right field. It's deep. It's on its way, and it is gone. A home run. Edwin Rios, a 2-run shot. And the Dodgers take a 4-2 lead.
At least Joe Kelly had a front row seat. Now, I'm not sure if he was in the bullpen. I'm not sure if he was in the stands wearing his mask, staying distant. I don't actually know where his perch was, but I do know that he had a front row seat to see the Dodgers take the second of the 2-game series against the Houston Astros, their nemesis now. And let's be clear, this is a rivalry that is going to fester. It's a grudge that is not going away. And as exhibit B, so Joe Kelly wasn't even with them in 2017, but he probably has his own grudges from his time with the Red Sox against the Astros going back to 17. We also know his nickname is Machine Gun Kelly. He's a live wire. But as we're asking you in a poll on Twitter and Facebook, whether or not you think he acted solo in throwing too close for comfort at Bregman and Correa, I don't think he did. There's no way. I do not believe it for a second that Joe Kelly took it upon himself. And maybe you believe that those were not intentional pitches. Maybe you buy Dave Roberts' story. But then you hear what Roberts told Jim Rome about the atmosphere and about preparing for Tuesday's game when the Dodgers faced off against the Astros in Houston for the first time.
It's all different. It's all different. And you know, I try to preach and you know, talk about every game is of the same importance, and you've got to have that same psyche and mindset. And I really do believe that. But understanding who the opponent was, you know, what transpired in November, December, what kind of came out, and then following that, all the banter back and forth in the media from players, and then ultimately the penalty that was handed down, rightfully so. And then you come back to essentially the scene of the crime. And, you know, so when we got to the ballpark, it was different. It wasn't the jovial, the music blared. It was kind of a quiet, calm focus. And we took that into the game. And obviously you get to the game and then the incident with Joe Kelly and things kind of escalate a little bit more.
Without skipping a beat, Dave Roberts calls Houston the scene of the crime. If that's not telltale, I don't know what is. And that it was different. It felt different. The game was tense, and his players could all feel it. They took it with them to the scene of the crime. Really good interview with the skipper, Dave Roberts, on the Jim Rome Show Wednesday on CBS Sports Radio. So I'd encourage you to go and grab it on our CBSSportsRadio.com website. Now, we've asked you in a poll, as I say, on Twitter and on Facebook, and you're blowing it up on Facebook. It's a yes-no question, and yet you've got a lot more to say than that. But the poll is up on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on my Twitter, and then also on Facebook. Do you believe Joe Kelly acted on his own in throwing at Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa? Now, remember, he just said his control was bad. He never implicitly denied the intent, but he also didn't accept culpability for it and say, yeah, I was thrown at him. I mean, it's Dave Roberts' story, so he's sticking to it. But right now, and I voted with all of you who are saying no chance did he act on his own, 57% of you on Twitter, and then many of you on Facebook too are with us. We're in the no chance camp. I can't believe that there was no discussion of this, that they never bounced this idea around in any of their Zoom calls. They never talked about it in a team group text. I hope somebody deleted those team group texts because they could be damning evidence. Actually, it doesn't matter. Joe Kelly's the one that carried it out, and I am not at all surprised that he is the one who was the chosen. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We can't decide. Now, I generally tend to err on the side of Chris with these things because Chris is far cooler and spends more time on social media than I do. Well, he's just far cooler. Do you spend a lot of time on social media? I feel like you do, but I guess I don't know when you're away from work.
Yeah, I check Twitter at least once every half hour.
Oh my gosh. Do you have an Instagram account?
Yes, but I use it far less.
Okay. So when you looked at this Joe Kelly post, what we think is a Joe Kelly post on Instagram, you said he has 71,000 followers, so you're pretty sure it's him.
Yeah.
Not a parody account.
Yes, and then I took a second look.
Oh no, what did you find out?
It looks like it might actually be a parody account. Although, from what we're discovering about Joe Kelly's personality, he might kind of have a spoofy, goofy page, which is what, if you keep scrolling down to some of the other posts on the page, things get a little dicey. So I thought on first glance, I saw a picture of him, 71,000 followers. Not every athlete is verified. It kind of depends. So I thought it looks real enough. But if you take a closer look and you study it a little bit, somebody might be a really big Joe Kelly fan out there.
Okay. I love it when we know that athletes have burner accounts. I can't say that it's him. We're not sure this is Joe Kelly, but it's funny anyway. So again, check it out on our social media. It's a hoot. He has this fake Joe Kelly. Fojo. Fojo! F-A-U-X.
Good job.
Thank you. Fojo has put up a post in which he is holding little images or little people, little guys of, let's see, it's Alex Bregman, it's Jose Altuve, it's Carlos Correa, and he says he is in no way sorry, that he is not, absolutely not sorry, and he also has a bunch of hysterical hashtags. Again, this could be real Joe, it could be Fojo, either way, it's worth your time this morning. It will make you laugh. So you can check that out on social media as well. Now, if we're going to be serious about it, fine, we'll be serious about it. Lance McCullers, who's, of course, a big league pitcher with the Astros, he is going to tell you Joe Kelly was wrong.
Not only did he, you know, take it upon himself to, you know, I guess send a message, but you know, he wasn't even part of the team during that season. You know, we knew coming into the game that he likes to go off script. So it is what it is. It was done unprofessionally. What he did after he punched out Correa was unprofessional. Running into the dugout was unprofessional.
I mean, it was unprofessional. I can't disagree with McCullers there. However, you hear McCullers say he took it upon himself. I don't think I believe that. Now, everybody else with the Dodgers needs to have plausible deniability, but... I don't think that it maybe Dave Roberts didn't even know. They didn't want to get Dave Roberts in trouble. But come on, Cody Bellinger called these guys out. The Dodgers have had this war of words with the Astros going back now several months. I mean, even the Astros were firing back and using choice words. So you could hear both teams barking when they were on the field Tuesday night. I do not believe that it was Joe Kelly just all by his lonesome, flying solo, going rogue. Not that I would. I mean, he would do that. I wouldn't put it past him, but I don't think he needed to go rogue in this situation. Sorry. I find the whole thing humorous because baseball suspends Joe Kelly, not Fojo, but real Joe, 8 games, and not one of the Astros got suspended for what we know was cheating, stealing signs, banging on trash cans. We know it happened during 2017, but they have immunity. So they have immunity. But baseball couldn't go wink, wink, nod, nod, and look the other way. I guess if you believed in makeup calls, you don't believe in makeup calls anymore. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Really, I think, a cool story. We don't always get a second chance when we make a career decision that we later regret. We don't always get a second chance at a do-over, at a mulligan, if you will. Braves outfielder Nick Markakis, in his mid-30s, opted out of the season 3 weeks ago. And he talks about how not only was he worried about his family and the virus and the, you know, the throes of the pandemic, but he was also really anxious over Freddie Freeman's story. And you remember, especially at the beginning, where it was a handful of Braves who tested positive, but it was Freeman who really struggled. He had a fever up to 104.5. And so he got knocked flat by the virus, where a couple of his teammates were either asymptomatic or didn't really have serious symptoms. But Markakis said he was already uncertain about playing. And then he saw Freeman talking about going through this, and who he decided for safety reasons that he would sit out the season. 3 weeks later, I didn't even know this was a possibility. And neither did he until he spoke to his GM. Markakis has had a change of heart and about face and decided that he will, in fact, rejoin the Braves and they will have him. And he did an interview on Wednesday to announce his decision. Very thoughtful. And I appreciate the fact that he gets the chance to change his mind.
Watching it from afar and, you know, being part of it at the beginning, it wasn't fun. You know, the first week of 2.0 was you know, not fun at all. And like I said, sometimes we make rash decisions that aren't necessarily thought out thoroughly. But, you know, we all make mistakes. You know, I'm not saying it's a mistake, but I think it's a mistake. We thought about it as a family and we talked about it. And, you know, with all the safety protocols going on, you just got to be safe. And I'm going to go out here and try to win and help this team win as many ball games as we can.
I'm glad the option is available for him. How many times do veteran athletes get cut? They lose their jobs. They become free agents. They believe they have a lot more to give, but they don't have an opportunity. Markakis has the opportunity. So after opting out on July 6th, he said he was uneasy. He was fearful. He was uncertain. It was far worse to watch. And so he has decided that he doesn't want his teammates taking these risks every day on the field without him.
I talked to my teammates. I talked to Alex and Snit and all those guys. And, you know, I'd like to come back sitting at home watching these guys, you know, compete the last couple of days and all the risks that they're taking going out there. You know, I just, in a way, deep down in, you know, that pit in my stomach, I felt like I needed to be out there, and you know, I had the opportunity to be welcomed back, and you know, here I am. I'm gonna do my best to get back as quick as I can and help these guys out.
Something else that struck me about Nick's comments: he says he's going to apologize to his teammates because he bailed on them. So that's his perspective. And you heard him use the word mistake. He said it's not for everyone a mistake, but for me it was. And I'm directly quoting him, I bailed out on them, and he does plan to apologize when he has the chance to address his teammates. So I think it's great that he has the option, again, because many athletes don't have the option of going back when they want to, and it's great that the Braves are willing to welcome him back too. They're not holding that against him. I'm sure his teammates aren't either. So not everybody is going to have an about-face, but in Nick's case, he's honest about it, and now 3 weeks later, he can't wait to get back to baseball. And he says his three kids and his wife, they're all in. They are pushing him to get back to baseball as well. Coming up next, awesome opportunity for us here on the show to catch up with longtime college football coach Tommy Bowden, of course, the son of the great Bobby Bowden. Coach Tommy was at Clemson. He was at Alabama. He was at Duke. He was at Tulane. He's made the rounds. He was the one who hired Dabo Swinney originally. We wanted to talk to him about the ACC's decision to have an 11-game schedule, which is 10 conference games and one non-conference game. And so we're not going to re-air the whole conversation, but I want you to hear a little bit with Coach Bowden. That's coming up next. Good morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
First and 10, Clemson. Lawrence back to pass. Foot slipped. He's sitting up. Now he's going to throw it long. Looking in the end zone for Ross. Finds him. Touchdown.
Oh.
Are you kidding me?
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Don Munson on the Clemson Radio Network. I sure am hoping we get a bunch of play-by-play. And the ACC announced on Wednesday. Got to get my days straight. Announced on Wednesday that it is committing to an 11-game slate with 10 conference games, as well as one non-conference game. Notre Dame is eligible, has a full schedule now, eligible to win that title. And so they're moving forward after conferring with the commissioners as well as the presidents. And every conference is kind of doing its own thing right now, hoping that they've got the best plan moving forward. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It was a really cool treat to catch up with Coach Tommy Bowden, formerly of Clemson and Tulane and a bunch of other schools during his tenure. He lives in Destin, Florida. We talked to him just before the show started, and he told me he was awake a full hour past his bedtime, but that he had nothing else to do when he was quarantined, so he didn't mind. So we're bringing back a part of that conversation. I know a lot of you are big-time college football fans, Clemson fans, ACC fans. I started out by asking him his reaction to the 11-game schedule that will start in mid-September for ACC schools.
Yeah, I think it's as good as what any conference has put on the table. I think you will get a true champion from the ACC. The fact you're playing 10 games, they got one non-conference opponent, but the fact they've got the two open dates in there in case of some of this pandemic mess creeps up on them. So as far as the 10 games, there's 14 teams. You're playing 10 of them. The four lucky people are the four people that don't have to play Clemson.
That's true. Good point. So with the flexibility and allowing a couple of open dates, how much more confident does that make you that the ACC will be able to go forward with this?
Well, I just think it gives you so much flexibility. But, you know, right now, this is something that nobody has answers to. You know, mm-hmm. in the 32 years I coached, we had a hurricane game move from the first year to the end of the year when I was a head coach at Tulane. We had a hurricane where the players were gone 4 or 5 days, and then we had 9/11 where games were postponed. But right. this is something that there's no background on. So the two open dates seems like a good idea. But again, we have no idea whether the pandemic's going to get better or going to get worse. And if it gets worse, then I don't think we'll be playing. And the two open dates will be irrelevant.
Right. And football is a unique sport, of course, because there's no way to keep players from not being all clumped together. There's no way to prevent the sharing of fluids. And so obviously the testing becomes so critical. As a former coach, what are your major concerns when you think about bringing your guys onto campus and getting started, which they would be doing this time of year?
Well, I think one of the biggest things, you know, when you recruit a young man, you sit in his home to his mom and his dad, and you tell the mother that, hey, I'll take care of him. I'll treat him just like my children. He's in good hands. Then all of a sudden you have a pandemic or a disease that right now we don't have a cure for. So there's a lot of sensitivity right there about the measures that you're going to take to protect their son. And I think that's would be more of a concern for me, sitting and looking that mother in the eye and say, hey, I'll take care of him. And then, you know, right now with there is some racial insensitivity right now that at least has been alluded to some in college football. And now you throw a little health insensitivity. You have to walk a fine line, no doubt about it.
Have to be really careful what you say, but also really careful what you do. Coach Tommy Bowden, formerly of Clemson and Tulane, with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. How would you address the locker room, Coach, when you consider a lot of younger people don't necessarily have the same fear or anxiety about the virus?
Well, you really don't. I think that's going to take some great policing by not only your medical staff. Your medical staff is limited with your trainers and your team doctors, but I think more so your support staff and your full-time staff are really going to have to be educated about what's going to be allowed. Because like you say, at that age, you know, there's no way you fear death. You know, you just don't at that age. It's going to affect everybody but you. So I think that's where the wisdom of staff and support staff and medical staff is really going to have to be a major factor, especially in the locker room environment. You know, you've got space on practice fields and on the game field, but you don't in the locker room.
Right.
That's really going to have to be monitored.
My mom is a teacher. She's been a math teacher for years and years. In fact, she was my math teacher in high school, believe it or not. And she's concerned as she gets ready to go back to school, not about the virus so much, but about getting kids to remain distant, getting kids to keep their masks on. And she kind of thinks that kids, once they walk out the front door, will kind of rip off their masks. But you're saying that it's really going to be on the coaching staff to police this and to do as much as you can to see what these kids are doing and how they're doing it.
Yeah, I think it is, because you take the wisdom of a 19 or 20-year-old and you take the wisdom of a coach that's in his 40s or 50s or early 60s, right around there. There's just a lot more discipline, a lot more wisdom, and young people just don't have it. That's something that takes time, the patience, the perseverance, the wisdom that comes with age, they don't have. So I think some of the responsibility and the burden then goes on the athletic department, the athletic staff, the medical staff, and how they govern it.
Coach, do you believe it's wisdom to try to move forward with a season, knowing what you know about college football and how, as you point out, it's a lot of kids and a lot of, you know, 19, 20-year-olds?
I haven't done nearly the research that I'm sure all these athletic directors and college presidents and medical staffs have done at the universities. And the ACC, you know, the years that I spent there, about 10 years as a head coach, they really, really do a lot of research on anything that they do. So I'm sure this has been researched, and medically they think they have a way forward. I don't think they would try it. I know finances are really tight right now.
Sure.
And but I just don't think the decision would be made with what's gone on the last few months as far as insensitive necessarily some of the athletes' needs, whether it be racial or whether it be health-wise. I don't think they would jeopardize that.
Longtime football coach Tommy Bowden with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So let me ask you this. Why is college football so vital to campus life, especially in some of these places where it really is a lifeblood? Why is it so important to try if you can?
Well, you know, I've been in a couple of different environments as assistant coach and head coach at private school, small private schools like Duke as an assistant, Tulane as a head coach in this larger city. But some of the cities that I've coached in, Tuscaloosa, Clemson, even Morgantown as a player and as a young coach, you know, the community evolves around those universities, and college athletics is such a big part of it. It's such a big part of the industry with either hotel, motel, retail industry. And it's a unique environment. Mm. And college athletics, at least in the Southeast where they think football was invented, It's a part of the culture, and it's a religious type environment where it's a 24/7. It's such a huge part of the lifestyle of people, at least in the South, where I've spent most of my time.
Now, as someone who's been part of a lot of different traditions in college football, Coach, can you imagine the games without fans or with very few fans in the stands? What would that be like?
Nobody knows. and you mentioned that. Yeah, I think back when I was at Clemson, probably the most unique experience in all the places I've been was for the team to come out of the locker room, go opposite the game field, get on a bus, get police escort, and drive around the stadium and run down a hill. I'm sure they're going to eliminate that bus ride, you know, because close quarters right there, they'll probably knock that out. So traditions like that, and then like you said, fans in the stands, I would say that the coaches will know a lot better how to respond to that after the first week because it's never been done. But there'll be a huge learning curve after that first week in college football about how to coach your players up on week two with no fans.
Longtime Clemson coach, longtime college football coach, coaching royalty, Tommy Bowden. And that's just a part of our conversation. We didn't even share with you, at least this run, his comments about Dabo Swinney and Clemson and why he hired Dabo in the first place. He also coached Dabo, by the way. And then I asked about his dad. So just quickly, I would love for you to check out the conversation on our podcast, afterhoursamielawrence.com. But he did say that Coach Bobby Bowden is in great health. He's still funny. He's 90 degrees. He's 90 years old. He does walk with a cane, so he doesn't walk quite as well. But he is going to church with the family on Sunday because Coach Bowden, Tommy Bowden, is going to speak at his hometown church. And so Coach Bobby Bowden is doing well and is healthy, and so is his 87-year-old wife. So that's good to hear. But please check out the rest of that conversation. If you're a big college football fan, big Clemson fan, it was good stuff with Tommy.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hungry for a taste of the most delicious audio of the night? You came to the right place. It's time for Bite Me with Amy Lawrence. Here's Amy Lawrence.
Would you believe it's finally here? The NBA restart and soon to follow the puck drop on the Stanley Cup playoffs. It was cool to see hockey on TV the last couple of nights as they gear up with exhibition games in Edmonton and Toronto. In Orlando, same story. No positive tests inside either of the NHL or NBA bubble. So that's great news. It's working, sports fans. It's working. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Zion Williamson had to leave the bubble because he had an emergency with his family. So he did. He then spent 4 days in quarantine after testing every single day that he was away from Orlando. He had a negative test every day. He went back to the bubble. He quarantined for 4 days. He's practiced the last couple of days and could be out there on the court tonight when the Pelicans tip off against the Jazz.
I was gone for 7 to 8 days with urgent family matters. And then I had to sit in a room for 4 days. So, you know, the NBA isn't something, you can usually just jump straight into, especially off stuff like that. So I think, like I said, me and my team are going to look to see what's best and if I'm ready to go out there.
He is a game time decision for the Pelicans opener because he was away from the team for 12 days. But I think that's what a lot of basketball fans would like to see. And that is the first game of the NBA restart, or as they're calling it, hashtag whole new game. Utah at New Orleans. And we'll hear from Rudy Gobert, who, if you remember, was patient zero for the coronavirus inside the NBA and really the catalyst for why they suspended their season indefinitely on March 12th. Can you believe it was March 12th? No, the 11th. Excuse me. The 12th was the NHL. March 11th. And then every domino that dropped. Did you think it would be July 30th before we would get basketball on the court again? I can't believe how quickly the time has passed, and yet it has seemed like it crawled as well. The Lakers and Clippers are the second game of the doubleheader on TNT tonight, so you'll get it on national TV, and you'll see the LED screens, if you haven't already, the distanced bench areas where they've got all kinds of space and spread out. I actually feel like they will enjoy this more. You know how crammed these big guys are on the benches a lot of times? They're kind of like finagling their rear ends down into the seats in between two of their teammates. It's not comfortable living. And so I'm think they probably enjoy having their own space, their own Gatorade containers and everything else. Certainly, every time I see LeBron James, he is laughing jovially. And so he's enjoying it. So the Lakers and the Clippers, we may or may not see Anthony Davis. He got poked in the eye, had to get cleared by doctors, but there's a chance he could be out there as well when they tip off. It's 9 o'clock Orlando time. Frank Vogel didn't want to put his team through too hard of a workout on the day before they finally get back to business.
Typical practice before a game, we covered the opponent a little bit and we got a little bit of live work in. But I was careful not to overdo it, with our first meaningful seeding game coming tomorrow.
With or without Anthony Davis, can you imagine how good it's going to feel for these Lakers to get back on the court? Though a bit of an adjustment, I still say, A, they haven't had this type of intensity. Scrimmages are okay, they're all right, but not the same thing as a seeding game. And for the Lakers, they'd already clinched a playoff spot. They want that number one seed in the West, taking on one of their top rivals in the Clippers. If they don't have Anthony Davis, that's yet another hole in their starting lineup, right? They're already without Avery Bradley, who is the defensive stopper, and Rajon Rondo is not available either at this point because he's injured, though he may or may not have started. But you're talking about three veteran guys that they'll be without. As for Frank Vogel, he says they've kind of moved past this whole issue where they're in an arena without fans.
I would imagine that, once we get in those games, in particular, when you have a lion in a locker room like LeBron James, everything's going to be done on point. The focus is going to be super heightened. And, I expect our guys to rise to challenge the same as it would be if we were playing in front of a big crowd.
The way that they have designed the court, though, and the area around the court, it really does mask the fact that there are no fans in the stands. They've got these giant LED screens all the way around the court. So regardless of the TV angle, you're not seeing empty seats in Orlando. What you're seeing is giant screens with the Lakers logo, with the Clippers logo. They're bright. They're constantly moving. They've got players' mugs up there. They've got, and I don't mean mug shots. I just mean their faces. They've got the stats. It's an interesting setup, and it's colorful and it's bright, and it really does, as I say, kind of mask and hide the fact that there are no fans. Now, I don't know what it's going to sound like. I've heard some of these exhibition games. I wonder if they're going to change the audio that's piped in. In NBA games, they're always throwing music over the PA. It used to be when I started watching the NBA that you weren't allowed to have music playing when the ball was in play, but that's changed now. So I don't know how different it's going to feel on TV, but I'm anxious to see it. I expect, though, for these teams that have championship aspirations, that there is going to be an intense. And at this point now, you can imagine many of the players like Danny Green of the Lakers have adjusted.
We're excited to be able to play again and give our fans some excitement. They're not here to watch us in person.
We know they're back home rooting us on and cheering us on, and they'll be helping us from the virtual TV screens.
Kind of like what Roger Goodell was asking of the fans during the virtual draft. Here he's got his mask on, obviously, because his voice is muffled. So Lakers will take on the Clippers. Anthony Davis is hopeful he'll be able to play, but like Zion, more of a game day, game time decision. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So then I get back to that first game of the doubleheader. It's the Jazz. It's the Pelicans. I don't know if you buy into the theory that the NBA was determined to make sure that the system they used for the restart included the Pelicans because of the very bright star that is Zion Williamson. Obviously, there's a chance that we could see this team in the playoffs, and they, I know that they want their brightest stars on the court. I mean, they're missing the Warriors, for example, and Steph Curry had just returned when the NBA shut down, but they want to highlight their young stars. I think they're thrilled with the fact that the Memphis Grizzlies are there. Now, right now, Memphis is a game below 500 and is hanging on to that number 8 spot in the West. The Pelicans are another 3.5 games back. Remember, they're tied with the Blazers and the Kings. 21.5 games out is what they are, and they're all 3.5 games back of the Grizzlies fighting to get into the playoffs. So to put the Pelicans on national TV as the very first game of the restart, to me, is all about highlighting Zion, and of course, they want him back. But you've also got stars on the Utah Jazz, currently sitting in the 4th spot in the Western Conference, and Rudy Gobert. He said his apologies, his mea culpas. He has been an active voice, and he's been all about the Jazz getting back on the court. And he's also indicated multiple times that he is excited and can't wait to play basketball again.
We are very excited to be back on the court at the highest level, and I think it's going to be great, you know, to be able to do what we do, and you know, and keep getting better, and hopefully, you know, have a successful end of the season.
I can only imagine how much emotion he felt. Maybe it wasn't guilt. I don't know if he carried guilt around with him. People get sick. People make mistakes. And after he talked it out with Donovan Mitchell, some of his other teammates, the reports were that they were fine and that they were willing to let it go. But he made such a display at that press conference of touching all the microphones and really kind of throwing it in the faces of people who were more cautious or worried about the virus. And then he turns out to be patient zero. I mean, it's a tough lesson to learn about being a jerk. It's a tough lesson to learn about mocking. It's a tough lesson to learn when you're the one that passes it on to your teammates. Now, thankfully, for the guys in the Utah Jazz locker room, almost all of them, I think, were asymptomatic. I don't remember hearing that any of them really had any serious symptoms, which is good. I mean, that's the low risk of being in such great shape as they are. But remember, Freddie Freeman, the cautionary tale, 104.5 degree fever that he had to suffer through. But Gobert at least has the satisfaction of knowing his Jazz are back on the court, and he was not the reason that the NBA completely canceled the season. Now, Quinn Snyder has the responsibility, like these other coaches do, of navigating and coaching during a pandemic and of trying to keep these guys not only locked in, and that's your job as a coach, right, but also understanding big picture here. It's a couple of months. If you're fortunate enough to play deep into the postseason, just stick to the plan. Stick to the program.
The fact that we had some guys test positive, some other guys that didn't, but we were quarantined early and went through the gamut of things, emotions and anxiety and then ultimately empathy for people that have contracted this virus and the impact it's had on millions.
Don't be like Lou Williams. That is the main point. Don't be like Big Lou. I think Zion's great too, the way that he has navigated it. He got tested every single day while he was gone. It's not quite like the NFL, though it's close. You may remember the rule in the NFL is if you miss a drug test, it's considered the same thing as failing a drug test. And you know, Kristaps Porzingis got in trouble for missing a test. You earn yourself I think it's a day, maybe 2 days, 48 hours in quarantine. And so the NBA is not playing. And as Zion pointed out, you can't just waltz back into the bubble and expect that everything's going to be the same. You have to abide by all the protocols. And let's be honest, that's what's keeping these guys safe right now. it is possible to do. It's working for the baseball players outside of the Marlins because they're taking personal responsibility. It's working inside the bubble. We'll do a little more about the NHL as we welcome back the NBA Thursday evening. I cannot wait. I actually have a friend who's in the bubble. He traveled there and entered the bubble on Tuesday. Okay, so he traveled to Orlando. He got picked up at the airport. He went into the bubble. He sent me a photo from his room. Oh my gosh, it's a gorgeous view. His room at his hotel where he's quarantined, and he had to pass the first test. So the first test came back negative. For media people, the protocols aren't quite as stringent, but he passed his first test. And so he's allowed then to walk around the hotel and the grounds. But he also has a room on, I don't know what hole it is, the room with a view right on the golf course. And so he says they quarantine, I'm reading his text message, they quarantined in their rooms until the negative result. Now they have more freedom. They can wander the hotel and the grounds and golf. So he says it's not so bad. They have to pass another test before they can get into the arena, even though there is in no world, no imagination, any scenario where they will have contact with the players. And this is a guy who's calling the games, generally sits courtside as one of the NBA's national announcers, but he's not doing that. He's up high where all of the media and broadcasters will be. They do not have face-to-face conversations with the athletes or the coaches. Instead, those are all over Zoom, even though they're, what, yards apart, yards from each other. And so he says they're going to golf on Friday or Saturday, which is kind of nice. And he said that the only bad thing, I'm glad, I can't tell you who it is because I don't want to out him. He said the only bad thing is that the hotel food is way overpriced. Can you imagine? We know, what does Disney like to do? Disney likes to take your money. They overprice everything. I won't accuse them of gouging, but they jack up the prices. And so he says the hotel food is okay, but it's overpriced. We're working on solutions for that. I'm going to write back and be like, yo, don't mess this up. Don't be like Lou. I have said that to him before and he laughs. Don't be like Lou. Leave the bubble in Orlando. Go to an establishment similar to Magic City for the wings. Don't do it. But remember, there were a couple of players early on who stepped over the quarantine line to get food delivered. So I'm a little bit nervous about his decision making. Anyway, we will have basketball to talk about tonight, more baseball as well. I'm really excited. They're back, you guys, they're back. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.